Hey everybody, this episode of Walking the Floor is made possible with support from Fender Play. Have you or someone you know been looking to learn how to play the guitar? Because my friends over at Fender recently introduced Fender Play, the complete learning platform from the most trusted name in guitar. And it really is the quickest and easiest way to learn how to play, offering on-demand guitar lessons through a video-based platform designed to help you play your favorite songs and learn key skills in minutes. So for your free trial of Fender Play, please visit Fender.com/walking the floor.
This is Mike from Mike and the Moon Pies. You're listening to Walking the Floor.
How'd you know? Perfect.
I'm walking the floor over you.
Walking the floor.
I'm walking the floor.
Walking the floor over you.
Hola, senores and senoritas. This is Chris Shiflett, and you're listening to another fine edition of Walking the Floor. And let me be the first to wish you a happy, happy new year and a belated Merry Christmas and all that jazz. It's a cold morning here in Los Angeles, and I'm just still basking in the glow of my interview from a couple weeks ago with Ace Frehley. Come on, if you haven't listened yet, make sure you go check it out. Considering it's the holidays, I'm sure you've got so much to do, and I want to get into the interview here quick. But I will remind you that I've got a lot of tour dates going on in the early part of next year. Some of them I'm supporting Blackberry Smoke. Some of them I am supporting Elizabeth Cook. And my good buddy Kendall Marvel's on those shows as well. So make sure you get on over to Chris Shiflett Music today and get your tickets. If you're one of those people that posts in the comments section on my Instagram, like, oh, come to Prosser. You never come to Prosser, Washington. Come to Oxford, Mississippi, man. You never come to Oxford. Then your dreams have come true. So get on over to my website, and I'll be coming to your town soon with all my buddies in Blackberry Smoke and Elizabeth Cook and Kendall Marvel. Come on, get on it. And of course, a big, big thanks to Fender Play for helping make this episode of Walking the Floor absolutely free. As you know, Fender Play is the complete learning platform from the most trusted name in guitar, available on desktop and mobile so you can learn anytime, anywhere. It's the quickest and easiest way to learn how to play guitar, bass, or ukulele, with bite-sized video lessons featuring hundreds of top songs and classic favorites. You'll even find some of my personal faves in there, such as Learn to Fly by the Foo Fighters and Tiger by the Tail by Buck Owens. For your free trial of Fender Play, please visit Fender.com/walking the floor. Somebody corrected me that that's actually forward slash, which I think might be grammatically correct, but the whole world calls it backslash, so I'm just going to stick with backslash. And while we're at it, don't forget support for Walking the Floor also comes from D'Addario. D'Addario, a fine maker of USA-made instrument strings and musical accessories, is committed to sustainability through the Playback program, cycling over 1 million used instrument strings. For more information on the Playback program and how to help in its mission of reaching 2.5 million strings in 2018, please visit playback.daddario.com. And don't forget my buddies over at Zounds.com. That's Zounds with two Z's, where every order $599 and above is eligible for their exclusive 12-part payment plan. With no application process, no interest charged ever. And you just pay that first monthly installment and your gear ships immediately. Zounds.com. Get on it. All right, let's hop on over to the interview. All right, now I know it's a tired old cliche to refer to any band as like the hardest working band in showbiz, but with Mike and the Moon Pies, that sort of tag actually rings true because that's how they do it, man. They're out there like on the road 200 gigs a year on average, and they've been doing that for a long time. If you haven't listened to their latest record, Steak Night at the Prairie Rose, you should. It's the kind of record that makes you want to dance and drink beer and get into trouble.
Now, Mike and his Moon Pies came by recently to Walking the Floor World headquarters, and they actually brought their producer and sometimes bass player, multi-instrumentalist, Adam Oder, who produced their last record and is producing the one that they're currently working on now between lots and lots of tour dates. And we had a great little talk, covered, you know, of course, we talked about Texas and the Texas music scene and Lloyd Maines and dance halls and Johnny Bush and Clint Black's brother and the various distinctions of the red dirt genre. And don't forget, Johnny writes the checks. This is Mike and the Moon Pies on Walking the Floor. So what brings you through LA right now? Are you guys on the road? Are you on tour?
Yeah, we're touring. This is like maybe a week and a half run or something like that. We were just through here. Turn that thing off.
Sorry. It's my first time doing an interview. Boys, thank you.
You'll get it figured out.
Sitting through it with me. It's funny because my computer, I always turn off the Wi-Fi, and I don't know why, but it like magically keeps getting messages afterwards. So I don't know. You're a producer, man. Come figure this shit out.
You know how this works.
I try to get the young interns to do everything.
Are you playing in the band as well as producing?
No, but I will get up and play a little bit. We do a thing where Omar is also a steel player. And
oh,
he
okay.
plays bass, and so Omar will get on steel. Steel player gets on another lead guitar. I'll play bass.
Oh, shit.
We'll do some stuff, and then I'll run over and play like Hammond while Johnny's playing piano.
Okay.
He's got a piano Hammond.
You just
setup,
can't keep him off stage.
I like it. I mean, well, it sort of it begs a question, and I was going to get to this, but since we're kind of there, I'll just ask, like, do you consider yourself, is this sort of a shifting crew of people in your band? I don't want to make the band uncomfortable.
No.
But like, do you consider yourself sort of like a solo artist or is it a band? Like, do you guys write together
it's
and all that sort of stuff?
It's most definitely a band.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like, because, I mean, it's been pretty much the same guys for 10 years.
Oh, really? Okay.
Pretty close to it.
Okay. I've never seen you live, so I'm going to ask you a bunch of super ignorant
no,
questions.
That's
who does what
that's
and
cool,
all that
man.
Sort of stuff.
This is going to be very informative.
For me. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's definitely a band. I mean, like, we've had a couple of guys come in and out, but, like, I mean, I've been playing in the band with the drummer since I was in, like, high school.
Okay.
So, it's all the same kind of dudes.
Right. And where'd you grow up? Where are you from?
Houston. Tomball, like, Northwest Houston.
Okay.
Northwest Harris County.
Oh, good. I'm going to be down there in November, and Houston is the one place that I have not found a hotel yet, so I'm going to ask you for some hotel recommendations when we get
we
done with
that.
This.
Yeah.
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 Okay. We can find you
this. So I read that something like some crazy number that you did like 180 shows last year.
Yeah, I think we hit 200.
200 yeah, shows on tour.
I think we're hitting 200 this year also.
So you're keeping the same schedule going now.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just more like there was like European shows this year and a
okay.
lot more around like this is the second time out west. This year.
Yeah, lots of country bands not only don't get overseas anywhere, but don't even really get to the West Coast that much. So that's interesting. How come, or how did you start to branch out into other
markets? Well, we came out here, like you said, we were in Pioneer Town last night. Like we did that for the first time, and this is the first time since 2012. So we came out here one time and did it by ourselves, just like figuring out the West Coast and see if we could do it. And then since then, we've been on this booking agency that's putting us out here with other acts.
Okay.
Like we came through here 2 or 3 years ago with Turnpike Troubadours.
Right.
We came through here earlier this year with Cody Johnson. And so now we're doing it again, kind of on our own. And
nice.
Playing that game.
It's a fantastic room. I love that place.
Yeah, man.
Did it's you really, guys eat really cool. dinner out there, too?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's so good. Yeah, I love that. Those gals that run that place just take such good
it's
care.
Awesome,
it's
man.
Great.
Yeah.
So when you first started out like as a touring act, were you kind of in that Texas circuit?
Yeah.
Or did you always have a vision of sort of getting beyond that? Because
oh,
I know for a lot of bands, that's just like an end to itself.
Yeah, know? For sure. And I was aware of, like we were doing a lot of the Texas dance hall scene thing and like doing like 4-hour dance hall shows and stuff like that. And then
right.
doing local Austin gigs.
Right.
And I never really was aware of even like really that whole Texas country music scene, red dirt thing. But then we kind of got swallowed up into it when we got with our booking agency because that was like the way we could branch out.
Wait, do you guys get associated with the red dirt?
Yeah, a
thing?
Lot, man.
Oh,
like,
really?
Yeah,
okay.
because we get our agency is kind of a. Is like a boutique agency for that type of thing.
Right. What makes, you know, I know the name Red
right.
Dirt, and I know a lot of the bands that are associated with it, but I don't quite understand what makes Red Dirt, Red Dirt. Is it just where you're from?
Because
it doesn't seem like your sound doesn't, you don't sound like Casey Donahue or something, you know what I mean?
They're
not the same
very
thing.
Much.
Yes.
But you know what I mean? Like, there's, to me, when I hear a lot of those bands that are called Red Dirt, no offense to Red Dirt or anything else, but it just sounds like, yeah, you know, well, a lot of mainstream country kind
this
of
is the,
sound.
You know, this is the argument that we have with the whole thing. It's like, we don't really know what that is anyway.
Right.
Like, we do what we do, but that doesn't, you know.
So
we just happen to be playing shows with those other dudes.
Right.
And if, I guess a quick brief history. We were doing all these records back in the, like the late 90s and stuff that were all Texas songwriters.
Right.
And then there was these Oklahoma songwriters coming down and like Cross Canadian Ragweed, Brandon Jenkins, all those guys. But they didn't want the Texas music name.
That Cross Canadian Ragweed is an awfully confusing name for a band that's from Oklahoma.
And yeah. Well, that was their
it's
whole
like,
thing.
It's like, why are they rendered? They're from Canada, obviously.
Yeah. And it's hilarious because that's how Red Dirt came about, was strictly because they didn't want to be called Texas music bands.
Okay.
And so they just started calling themselves Red Dirt, and then like...
But then the Texas thing kind of just joined up with that, right?
Yeah, because they were all touring together,
right,
you know, and everything.
Right.
And that's how it all just kind of quit.
So we don't have Red Dirt out here, but we have lots of brown sand. Yeah. So that's going to be my genre. Yeah. But there's nobody else to come with me. You guys are welcome to come over to brown sand.
Yeah, we'll be in all of the things.
Yeah. When did you get your start producing records? How long have you been doing this?
I started engineering all of Lloyd Maines's records back in 99. So
for people listening that don't know who Lloyd Maines is, explain that.
He's Natalie Maines's father, but he's also like, he was with Joey Lee, and Joey Lee was touring with The Clash and everything.
Right,
and
right.
He came about with Terry Allen and stuff. His first producing was Terry Allen's.
Right. And he's a legendary pedal steel player.
Yeah, an amazing, incredible pedal steel player. And I was fortunate enough to work with this guy, Dub Miller, who was cutting a record that Lloyd was producing. And we went to Cedar Creek and immediately got the Cedar Creek recording engineering gig. I became head engineer because Lloyd liked working with me. And for 7 years, I think we made like 150 albums, you know, of him producing and stuff. And it was all these, the Pat Green, Corey Morrows.
Right,
that's how
right.
I got the Dixie Chicks stuff and Roger Craigers and all them. That's kind of, he started guiding me towards producing.
Okay.
So he was just like, you have a good ear. And I still actually go play bass with him sometimes, you know, just
with Lloyd.
With Lloyd, yeah.
Oh, wow.
He plays with this girl, Terry Hendricks, and I'll go out and he'll give me a list of dates. Hey, we're doing band dates. Can you do them? And in my old second engineer that took the Cedar Creek gig when I left to go independent is our drummer also, who worked on Silva. John Silva.
Yeah, he worked on the Mockingbird.
His name's John Silva?
Yes.
Yeah. That's Foo Fighters' manager's name.
Which we've always laughed about. Because he's always just like, I just got thanked at the Grammys. Like, shut up, dude.
I'm just trying to think of our manager playing drums. It's just funny in itself.
Oh, man,
Is Lloyd Maines, does he act as a mentor for young pedal steel players down there?
I mean, we were just in Taos, New Mexico, doing that festival, and our steel player, Zach... You know, I was just like, which they've known each other, but I was just like, Lloyd, Zach, talk, please.
Right.
You know, because,
right.
I mean...
Well, if there's two steel players in a room, they're going to be talking no matter what.
Exactly. Right.
They
right.
have their own little world. Omar. They have their own little... Because he's a fantastic steel player also. And it's just like, when they start talking, we all look at each other like, what the fuck? Like, I don't even know.
There's a reason why all those motherfuckers are crazy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? No offense. No offense.
My gosh.
I ran into Lloyd at Bill Miller's
barbecue,
and I parked right next to him, like unknowingly, and I walk out and his wife's like throwing out a coffee right like where my driver door is at, and she's like, oh, I'm sorry, and I look up and he's just sitting there in the driver's seat, and I'm like, how's it going, Mr. Maines? And he's like, oh, you're from the Moonpies, like,
oh, nice.
He was like, you know, you tell the boys I said hi.
I really like your AB pedal technique.
yeah.
Yeah. Okay, you mentioned the dance hall culture in Texas, and I know that's kind of where you guys got your start, right? Like playing, and you talked about playing like 4-hour sets and all this stuff. Can you talk about that a little bit? Like, what is that like? What does a band do in that situation? That's a situation I've never been in. Well, I've been in it a little bit. here and there. I mean, I've never been a part of that scene, but I've played where like line dancing broke out or dancing broke out or whatever. And you're like, oh shit, our song's like 2.5 minutes long. What the fuck are we going to do?
There was a lot of covers in that set.
Right.
You know what I mean?
But and then are you then like stretching them out and doing like 15-minute long jam version, I mean, just to keep people on the floor going?
But we kind of just learned more songs. It was just like, and that's where we learned not to have dead air in the set.
Right.
So it's just like bam.
So you just bam like a Ramones show. Just absolutely. Go one song into the next.
And there's like no set list. It's like reading the room. Like if they're dancing to this, then I know they're going to do a shuffle next. Throw a waltz in every 5 or 6 songs. Okay.
Interesting.
Like, it's all about the dance.
So how you sort of plan your set list to keep a flow going.
Yeah. So every show would be completely different, but it would usually start and end like very similarly. I knew how to get into the set and then get out, but what happened in the middle, you never knew it was going to happen.
Just got to react.
Yeah, for sure.
Does that enter your mind when you're writing songs, when you're writing your own original songs? Like, are you thinking about rhythms and grooves and tempos and stuff that you know are going to satisfy?
When we were doing that and I was working on probably the Mockingbird record, that was like, I was writing for the show.
Right.
It was like, I want to do things that I think are going to work with the dance crowd or whatever, with whatever the shows we were doing at the time.
Yeah.
You know, I don't necessarily do that as much anymore.
Right. Has that followed you in other places? Like to people when you're touring Europe or somewhere where people don't really know that culture.
Yeah.
Do they start dancing?
Yeah. It's like people, like a lot of people think of us as a dance band because we spent so many years doing that. And our records still are like, they're swingy records and stuff like that. It's very danceable stuff.
There are not a lot of people playing shuffles in country music anymore, you know? Yeah.
So people think about us a lot in that way, like, we're going to go dance at the Moon Pie show.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And that's to its fault in some places because, like, in Austin now, like, we're packing every room that we're playing. And so nobody wants to, all the dancers feel like turned off.
Right.
Because, like, oh, well, I can't dance in front of the stage or whatever, you know, because I have people that are standing there now.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, but the dance community in Austin really, like, helped us.
Right.
They would, because they come, they're, like, really loyal people.
Sure.
They come out to every show. Like, if you play 3 nights a week, they're going to come every night.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's what they do. Every night they go out dancing, and they have their 5 or 6 bands that they follow around. And
have you always been based in Austin since you've been doing Mike and the Moon Pies?
Yeah. Yeah, it's always something.
Awesome. How do you get, I mean, Austin's like, you know, it's like Nashville or any one of these other hotbed cities, like where it's a crowded music scene.
Sure.
How did you guys get noticed? Because I know there's a lot of people playing the kind of music that you play, like specifically in Austin. Like, how do you sort of rise above the din of everybody doing the same
thing? I think we were the only guys doing what we were doing 10 years ago.
So really?
It was like this bringing back of like the Armadillo World Headquarters kind of thing. And like all that.
Yeah.
Like there was a couple people doing it, and there was some older guys that were still doing the dance. There's still the Broken Spoke, you know. I mean, that was happening every night, I remember. But we were like the younger cats, and we were doing it. We were playing like more like '90s covers, '90s like country covers. Everybody else was doing, you know, George Jones or whatever.
And how old are you?
35.
Okay, so what?
34.
Was like '90s country. I'm trying to do the math here real quick, but was that like your sort of formative years of getting into country?
Yeah, like
music?
I was listening to like country radio in the late '80s, early '90s.
Right.
That was like I knew every word on the radio to those songs.
Well, backing up a little bit, so you grew up outside of Houston or in Houston. What would you say was like your sort of chief musical influence? Like, was it family? Was it something? Friends,
it was a little bit of family, just because my dad was involved in like the Houston rodeo circuit thing, and not as a rodeo guy, but as like a committeeman that did bookings for like parties and charities and things to raise money for scholarship funds.
Right. So you saw a little bit of the behind the scenes of how events work.
Well, he ended up making friends with all of these guys that he was booking. Like, so Johnny Bush was like a friend of his and it would come over. Rusty Weir was a friend who'd come over. And then this guy, Brian Black, who's Clint Black's brother, was basically living in my house when we were like, when I was like 13 to 16 or even more. Yeah.
And he still is.
He lives, but he lives behind my dad's house right now.
Really?
Yeah. On his dad's property.
Is Clint Black a Texas guy?
Yeah.
He's also
from the Houston area.
Okay.
So all those guys, there's like 3 or 4 brothers.
I didn't know he had brothers that were also entertainers.
Yeah. And this guy was like, it kind of gave me a whole perspective, because this guy, Brian Black, was like just some local dude that played like kind of a cover band set. He had like a record out that was like some songs that he had bought from somebody. Right.
Right.
But he's just doing like local and Texas shows, and he's got like a Silver Eagle parked outside of my house.
What?
And I'm like, this is crazy. Like, you can really? Do this, and you're
did
just
he
like,
let you on the Silver Eagle?
Yeah, man. I was like, I spent as much time as I could. It was like, because it would roll up at like 3 o'clock in the morning, yeah. Like, and I'd be looking out my window, like, oh, I'm gonna go hang out on the bus with
so you're a teenager
my dad
at this
and Brian.
Point.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was crazy, man, because it was like, oh, man, people can do this that aren't famous.
Right, right. But people can't do this that aren't famous at that, like with a bus
right.
in many other, I mean, it might just be Texas.
Sure.
That where that sort of thing
yeah.
exists.
You it know blows what I mean? Me away how many people have buses. Like, we're just in a van and trailer, but like, man, everybody else has got a bus.
What are we doing wrong?
Houston, Dallas, College Station, Lubbock, and then they come back. Okay, cool.
So our title sponsor for this podcast is now Fender Play. They have like this online video
like
tutorial
lesson thing.
Yeah. So yeah. Were you a lesson guy? Like I said, I haven't seen you, so I don't know. Like, are you the one ripping some of those leads on your records
I
and stuff?
I did take lessons when I was a kid. Like when I was 8 years old, I think I started taking guitar lessons. And I was, you know, I learned whatever you learn at the very beginning of that. And then I got into like Stevie and playing blues. You know, I was in a Texas kid, right? And my dad loved Stevie. So like once I started like playing like pentatonic solos, I was like, oh, this is about as much as I want to do. Like,
yeah, that's so funny. Good. I had the exact same experience when I was like 14. I remember I took lessons from in Santa Barbara from the guy who's like the rock guitar teacher in town. Fancy music, and he showed me like a couple of licks, and I remember I got home, I was just like, I fucking got it.
Yeah,
I got it. Goddamn.
I got
that one. Woola, woola, woola. I was like, I got this shit on fucking lock. Man, I'm going.
Like, I don't want to do anything else. Yeah. Yeah. Great.
So how old were you when you started playing in bands and, you know, performing in front of people?
I had like a weekly gig. That's what the Steak Night at the Prairie Rose thing is about, because that's a true thing. Like, I had a weekly gig every Wednesday from when I was like 14 to 17, and I just played acoustic for like 2 hours at this bar called the Prairie Rose. And my dad got me. We used to go in that bar a lot when
I
was a kid.
That's like the story of the song. Yeah. It's like you're tagging along with your old band kind of thing.
Yeah. So I played there every Wednesday for a few years, and that was like just me by myself. And then right around the end of that time is when I was having like... me and the drummer, Kyle, who's still my drummer now, and a couple other rotating bass players or whatever would have like a blues band thing. And we would play like Houston Rodeo cook-off stuff. And we'd just do like 2 or 3 hours of just playing blues covers.
I mean, for people listening that don't play music, 2 or 3 hours, that's a long time on stage.
Yeah.
That's a long time
on
stage.
Now that's where the things where we would stretch it out into jams.
Right.
Is like, 'cause it was me and another buddy who was also like this, you know, Stevie Ray wannabe player. We both had strats.
Nice.
Let's
be honest.
Yeah. Set lists were a lot shorter, but the show was longer.
Yeah. Funny.
So I did that for a while, man. And the blues thing kind of, you know, when I moved to Austin, I started to do blues jams like around town just to kind of get to know people or whatever. And then quickly that was like, well, this is not what I should be doing.
Right.
We have to do something more substance here. We got to make something happen.
when did you start writing your own songs?
Probably right around 2002, like when I started to really, you know, do it with like for this band. I'd been writing songs. I had another project with a couple of guys when I was in Houston still, and he was writing a lot. We were co-writing stuff. We were listening to a lot of like Ryan Adams and like writing stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so we made like some little bedroom records with that.
Are those all like super minor key, like Moby Sad Americana songs?
For sure. They're definitely Americana songs.
Yes.
So that's cool.
So then, at that point, is that when you moved to Austin and like started the Moon Pies?
Yeah, I started it like only 2 or 3 years after I'd been in Austin. I went to like recording school there at Arlen. And they have the thing called Media Tech, and it was just like, you know, it's like a year of sitting in a studio and not, you know, I mean, it was nothing. I already knew how to run Pro Tools and stuff, you know, like, but it was like running a tape machine and,
right.
And you're in like a really professional setting.
Did that make you want to make records, or did that have the opposite effect of like, get me the fuck out of the studio?
Like,
I love making records, but if I'm in a studio for too long, I start to lose my fucking mind.
Nah, dude, I'm like all about it, man.
Okay.
I'm totally about being in, everybody else in the band's like, I don't want to get out of here.
Yeah.
But that's for me, man. That's that.
Whoever designed studios without fucking windows is like the worst fucking worst idea possible. I mean, I get it. You want it soundproof.
That's why our studio Yellow Dog literally is all windows that look down on the river.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Control room, tracking rooms, all the everything.
Just looks nice.
Down. You can see everything you want to do.
Right.
Like, get the part right.
Like fish in the river, like, hey guys.
Get the guitar in fishing. Tune, and maybe you can go fish, Kevin. Yeah.
Around that time, I also saw that Wilco doc, the I'm Trying to Break Your Heart thing.
Yeah.
And that made me really get into making records.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I was like, okay. That's a great documentary. Yeah,
it's really, really awesome. That's like, I could watch that again today.
Totally. Yeah. You know, it's funny, man. When my kids, those are my three boys on that painting behind you. And that was when they were like really young. They're a lot older now, but, When they were all in preschool, I was out pushing one of my kids on the swings, you know, just like chatting with some other dad who's there, and we were talking about stuff, and it was Sam Jones who made that movie.
Really?
Yeah, we just sort of over the course of the conversation, he mentioned that. I was just like, you did what?
What?
That's his first
talk about being
thing.
At the right place at the right time.
For sure,
when
yeah.
a band is just fucking imploding, like on a number of levels, yeah. you know?
You're crazy. All that. Yeah.
That was the first thing he ever did because he was just a photographer.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Totally. I mean,
yeah,
it's nuts.
Really
all
that
drama with yeah. What's
yeah,
his
with
name?
Jay that
was
the guitar.
Yeah,
stuff, yeah,
all that stuff. It's nuts. Wow. Yeah. Okay. So why do you think this, I mean, I'm kind of jumping around here, but why do you think this latest record has gotten so much attention? Like, you know, to be perfectly honest, like I hadn't heard about you until about the last year or so. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, like you guys are fucking everywhere. And it seems like you're everybody's favorite band. Why, when you listen and you've got a bunch of records, you know, and the records are all great. And it's not like you did some radical shift into some, we completely changed our sound kind of thing. Like you've been kind of holding that thing, you know,
yeah.
it's a through line through all your records. So why do you think this one, is it because of the 200 shows? Is it because of just honing your craft? Are you a better band? Like what is, what's that like magic sort of thing that clicks for a band that makes it all of a sudden start to work on that level?
I definitely think it is a lot of those things.
Right, right.
It's yeah. like all of that happening at the same time, right?
Yeah.
Like we've been playing a lot for the past like 3 or 4 years. And then, you know, this is our first record with an outside, like a really outside producer too, with Adam doing
right.
it. And like, it kind of keeps us, it straightens us out, like where yeah. we want to go. You know, I don't know where we're going to go. And we never did a record like this before. Like, I come in and play the songs in the kitchen and then we go and record it until we have the cut.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Kind of one song at a time.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a great way to make yeah. a record.
So I think that really, you know, it let us create a whole different, like, just a truer identity of what we actually are on the road.
And you always like self-produced your records
yeah.
prior to that, right? So what is having a producer that you trust sort of do for you? Does that allow you? I know, because I'm been in a similar situation where I had just sort of self-produced whatever I did, you know, mm-hmm. on my own for years. And then the last couple records I made worked with like a real producer. And it was such a shocking change to not be micromanaging everybody else in the room and yeah. just sort of focusing on what I'm doing, that it's like it's heaven, you know,
yeah.
it's the greatest. You know, when you got somebody that whose opinion you trust, who you're like, okay, he's steering the ship, I'm just gonna focus on me, is that like kind of how did you yeah. have that similar experience?
That's exactly how I felt about it. And it was I wanted to not only give everything over to him, I wanted to like have the band feel the same way. It was like, here's the song and this is where I'm at with it, and then just figure out where you want to go with it. You know what I mean? I'm not going to, you know, I don't want to give too many ideas.
Right.
Stay out of the way a
yeah.
little bit. You know what I mean?
You can, when you're making a record, you can obsess on like kick drum yeah. patterns and shit.
For sure.
Like it, then when you sort of take a step back, you're like, God, I just fucked that all up.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I was sitting there worrying about some little minutia thing instead of just the vibe in the room or whatever it was, you know?
Yeah. And I think that we sometimes are getting into that a little bit, like, because we're working on another one now.
Really?
And, yeah.
When did the last one come out?
February.
Oh, okay. God yeah. damn, that's pretty quick.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to stay in the picture.
Are you guys all like unmarried and no kids at home,
I'm
no commitments?
I have a year old kid.
Oh, okay.
But you know, we're doing fine.
I get it. I get it. It was funny, man. I was home. You know, we just wrapped up touring for like an album cycle. And so we've been gone a lot, you know, the last year and a half or so. And I was home for a couple of days last week and then left again for 4 days. And I got up to Edmonton. I got into my hotel room and just, you know, that morning, it like, you know, sitting there with my kids at breakfast going, okay, so who knows where dad's going? You know, doing that whole thing that you do. And I call home and my wife's just like, so where are you? I was like, what do you mean? I'm in Edmonton. Remember, we talked about it like all weekend. She's like, what are you doing up there? I'm like, what do you mean? What am I doing? I'm on tour. She's like, I can't fucking keep track of you. You just come and go.
Yeah, there's been a whole like, she doesn't even try really anymore for me.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. What's the point?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, how does a band from Texas get noted, you know, get draw attention to itself when you're sort of outside of the, you know, you didn't move to Nashville and do the whole thing sort of through the, you know, proper channels or whatever. How does that work?
To me, it's just touring and a good publicist.
Right. And who puts your records out?
We release them ourselves.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, we own all that stuff. And
Have you always done it that way?
Yeah. We work with a small, like, Texas area, like, distribution company.
Okay.
But they put it in, like, you know, local record stores down there.
Right.
They do all my, you know, online distribution as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But other than that, man, like, we just, you know, ship records out and
really?
Sell them at the shows.
Yeah. You're going to get that Silver Eagle soon, then.
Yeah. Yeah. One more record, man.
Yeah. Yeah. This next one. No doubt. This is it. And then the follow-up.
Wow, that's a lot of work. How do you, like, who, do you run that yourselves?
Yeah, I mean, me and Adam are doing most of that stuff behind the scene kind of deal.
Wow.
And Johnny fulfills a lot of crap.
Yeah.
You know, and just, yeah.
Because Johnny's, like, TMing, like, playing piano and tour managing and, like, doing, like, merchandise shipping.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
And he's the...
Yeah.
And
he writes the checks.
And he's also the school musician of everybody. Yeah.
To everybody out there listening, Johnny writes the checks. Yeah. Don't forget it. Yeah.
Speaking of Johnny,
there was a quote of yours that I read that I liked, and I just wanted to dig a little deeper into it. You're talking about songwriting. You said there's that thing you get when you're cruising in your truck with the windows down and you listen to that certain right song. You just get that moment you're looking for that you haven't felt in 5, maybe 10 years. That's when it happens. So what is that moment? Is that the inspiration moment? Is that like where you're like, oh, where's the pad and, you know, where's my pen and paper? I got to get this down. Like,
yeah.
What do you mean by that?
Cause I think it's more about, like, for me, songwriting tends to be a little bit nostalgic for me. So it's like putting me into another place. It's probably somewhere. It's like a deja vu moment. It's like, I've been here before. Like, you know, the air temperature is just right. Like, I write better in the cooler weather. Like, the fall is where I like get.
Really?
So for some reason, it's unexplainable. Like, I must've had some sort of creativity blast in the fall at some time when I was a kid.
Right.
Something.
Right.
So that all comes back to me again. So a lot of times, like, especially when I was writing for Steak Night, that record, I had just bought this 85 Chevy pickup truck that was just like the one my dad had kind of thing. And I would cruise around in that truck and like listen to like Clint Black and stuff that I was listening to then. And so it puts me back in that headspace.
Right.
And then that's why I think a lot of our stuff sounds like it does, because that's kind of where I'm at when I'm writing that stuff.
Right.
Is in that moment, like I was when I was whenever 14 or something like that.
Sure. That's a really interesting thing. You know, I feel the same way. And I actually said that to somebody, that a songwriter named Peter Case, that I took a songwriting workshop that he put on years ago. Because I feel like I always go to, there's a certain period, and it's kind of like my late teens through my 20s, you know, and that seems to be lyrically where I draw from more than anything else. And I don't know why exactly, but it's hard for me to write songs about what life right now.
Absolutely.
Because it would be like, I love my kids and everything's great. And yippee, and this is just not fucking interesting. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Right.
To me or anybody else.
Right.
But, and my buddy Peter Case was like, man, we're living in the most interesting time in human history. What's wrong with you? I was like, fuck.
There's so much. I'm loving it.
You're right. And I was like, almost like feel guilty. Like, I can't write a song about my girlfriend when I was 17 again. God damn it. I got to write something about Trump or whatever.
Yeah, for sure.
You know?
Well, that's something that I'm kind of running into is like, I've written a lot of songs about family or my dad or my mom or like just my sister or anything like that. You know, like, I have like a song at least on every record that's pretty much that thing.
Yeah.
And so, like, I did some interviews, like, I think where that quote came from was, like, the Rolling Stone one or something.
I think so.
And this same thing is, like, he asked me about the Steak Night thing, and I was like, yeah, like, I've written that song, like, 3 times, like, and I don't want to write that song anymore.
Right.
It's written now.
And I think that that's something else we're changing on the new record, too, is, like, I'm trying to write more, you know, about what... I'm writing a lot more about the band anyway, it seems like.
Yeah, I was going to say the new one we're working on now is more about the band and more of the band involved. Like at the end of Steak Night, the band got more involved in the writing process.
Mm.
But then this record is very much like, and even we've done more some, we got some soundtrack stuff that we wrote some songs for where we're all just like hammering out ideas. And okay, cool, that's great. And this is, and this new record we pre-proed a lot, and there's a lot of songs that didn't make the new record that we already are like, well, that can go on the follow-up to this
sure.
one.
Sure, yeah.
So, but having the studio, we can multi-track and throw ideas down really fast.
I've been getting a lot of like exercise work, like that soundtrack stuff is like you could do like an exercise in writing something for this movie or whatever, and like the way this movie, the way you know, the way this movie looks is gonna make it
and how it feels, and the emotion
for sure.
We saw it, like we saw our clip where it was gonna be and stuff, and it was like, well, no one's got any ideas, and it was like, well, they're gonna be here in about 30 minutes, so what do we do? And it was like, okay, key E, this riff, oh, do this, and what's it about? Okay, and then 20 minutes later, the song was done.
Yeah, I had nothing when we walked into that room.
That is like what you just described is really one of the best things about making records. With that feeling, like where you walk in at the beginning of the day and maybe you've got a verse and a chorus or a riff or some shit, and you know, 12 hours later you come out of there and you've got this thing that nobody saw coming. You know,
That's kind of what the new record was. Like I didn't really like, we had this idea for where we were gonna do it and you know, and what it was gonna kind of be like, but I didn't have any songs. So it's like when we were doing pre-pro, I would just pull out my phone and like find a riff that I recorded, you know, 4 years ago or something, or like just a hook or something like that, and we built the whole record basically just off of those little things.
That's a great what you just said is great, because it's something I struggle with all the time, going back and listening to all that shit on your phone.
He's really good about keeping all that stuff and keeping track of stuff and everything. That's what's cool about Mike, you know. And we did this, the pre-pro for this one, it was just like, we'd be in the studio all day, and the studio has like a back deck and then has a bunkhouse and stuff, so everybody just stays there. And so it was like, okay, we'd be out, like we'd throw in like a 12-hour day and then sit in the back and eat and grill, and then just he'd start going through the phone and Catelyn would start coming up with ideas, and it was just like, okay, so what are we going to work on tomorrow? Well, let's try this, you know?
Right.
Start throwing those ideas together.
Fuck, man, I want to come make a record with you. That sounds fucking awesome. And you can look at a river while you're doing all that.
For sure.
Like, this sounds fantastic.
Yeah, it's great. You just gotta not freak out.
Yeah, that's good advice for all you young musicians. Just don't freak out. Yeah. I mean, what a good thing to be able, that must feel really liberating, because one of the most frustrating things about making records is you make a record and you just want the whole world to hear it, you know, and then it takes another fucking year to put it out or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
But you guys have your own label, so that's up to you, more or less, right?
But we still, like, even with Steak Night, we were done Steak Night in the summer. It didn't come out till February because we had the publicist and we had all this stuff in place.
I was trying to, you know, the whole thing, like, we're getting better over the years of, like, how to put out a record, you know, what to do and when to do it. And
right, what to put money in and what to focus on and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I know. That's, believe you me, dude, I made a new record in the spring. And I've been going out and doing a bunch of solo shows and stuff, but like, I don't even know how I'm putting it out yet. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like still like, I'm in the kind of home stretch working out a deal right now. But like, you know, it's like, what, even once we get that done, it's going to be months before, you know, I don't know, the middle of next year or some shit. You know, it's like the most frustrating thing. It'll be over a year old probably by the time I get it out. You know what I mean?
Like,
it's
the most frustrating thing. Once somebody asks you what date it's coming out, if you say a date, it's never going to
happen. It's not going to happen. Right.
That date. totally. Exactly.
That was I was telling the guys, there's a classic albums TV show on Goodbye Yellow Brick Road. And when they recorded that, they flew back, and that's when Elton did his famous The Hollywood Bowl with the different colored pianos. And they played the entire Goodbye Yellow Brick Road record at that show, and he had two other records come out before that record
came out. Get the fuck out. Really?
Because they were so far ahead. Right. And so it was almost 2 years before anybody could even hear those songs they just saw at the Hollywood Bowl.
No shit.
And it was just like, whoa. And that's kind of part of what we like. We write a lot, and we're just like recording any chance we can, just so those ideas are there and stuff, and we can throw records together, and that way we're just ahead of the game. So we're not that. We've been touring for 2 years. What are we going to do now?
Right.
You know, shit, we got to write another record. You know, it's like, you know, just keep the creativity going.
Well, that is admirable, because I know it's tough. You know, a lot of times when you're in tour cycle mode, you know, it's real inviting to just go sit in your hotel room and watch Netflix or whatever and not focus on fucking writing new songs and stuff, you know. But, That's good for you guys. That's great.
Thanks.
So what's next? Like just more touring, more finish the record and just keep going?
Yeah, I mean, for me, like, we kind of finished out. This is our last, like, real tour of the year, obviously. Okay. And then we go back and do, like, our regular regimen of Texas regional stuff.
Cool. Yeah.
Got one little Midwest run.
Yeah, we have one Mid. That's right. Yeah. I keep forgetting about that.
Yeah, Missouri and Iowa and stuff.
That's right.
Come back right
before
Thanksgiving.
That's, like, 2 weeks.
Yeah, no, yeah. We get home and then we go.
Yeah. Cool. So we do that and then, yeah, finish this record. Hopefully in the
we won't put a date on it. Yeah, we won't put a date on it.
It'll be in 2019, maybe.
Yeah. Well, fuck yeah, man.
Yeah.
Let me just see if there were any little burning questions that I didn't get to. I think we pretty much covered everything.
Fish 101 hat he's wearing.
Do you know Fish 101?
No, but I want to know about Fish 101.
It's a restaurant down in Leucadia down the street from my friend's house. That is fucking great. It's amazing. Yeah, it's so good.
Now, seafood restaurant now. I'm just like, do we have time before the mid-show?
Well, it's about a two-hour drive from here, so you're probably not going to make it today, depending on where you're headed. But my buddy, a good friend of mine down, and you know, Leucadia is like North County, San Diego.
Okay.
And my friend's son, who's, I guess he's late teens or something, he's pretty young, he's like a fucking gnarly spear fisherman. So he goes out, you know, they'll just go out into the middle of the ocean and he jumps into these kelp beds and spears fucking tunas as big as you. It's the craziest fucking thing you've ever seen.
And they
see him too. It's funny because last time I was down there, when I got this beautiful hat, my buddy Rick was like, come by my house, dude, I have like so much tuna, I don't know what to do with it, you know, Ryder just caught this giant fucking tuna. And I went and he just had fucking like Yeti fucking cooler on Yeti cooler filled with fucking tuna and just loaded me up. And it was like I had so much I didn't even know it. Like, I mean, I got a family of five, like we ate as much as we could.
Yeah.
And then I was just like giving it to my cat and shit, like, come on buddy, eat the tuna. Giving it, my dog ate the tuna. It was fucked up. It was weird, but we had to eat it.
Yeah.
I can't imagine having the balls to swim in kelp beds just out there with a bloody fish on the
end. Oh no, dude, it's so gnarly. It'd be like the equivalent of if you were like hunting and killed like a wild boar and like threw it on your back and then like a lion chased after you or some shit, you know what I mean? Like, it's fucked up. Yeah. Well, thank you guys for taking the time to come do this, man. I really appreciate it.
Thanks
good
so
luck
much, man.
With everything you're doing.
Dreaming about me all day
long, staring at my number in your telephone. All right, that was Mike and the Moon Pies on Walking the Floor. Make sure you get on over to walkingthefloor.com. I'm going to put some links up for you to check out whatever is going on in Mike and the Moon Pies world at this very moment. You know, I got to hang with Adam, producer Adam, when I was down in New Braunfels, opening up for Paul Cawthon. Love that dude. Love all those dudes. They were cool. That was a good hang. And don't forget, get your tickets now for my shows supporting Blackberry Smoke and then also the shows supporting Elizabeth Cook with my good buddy Kendall Marvel. You can go to chrisshiplettmusic.com. Get your tickets today. Get your tickets today. Get your tickets today. And thanks again to Fender Player for all their support. If any of you listeners are interested in learning how to play the guitar without those nasty usual hurdles, check out a free trial by visiting fender.com/walkingthefloor. And we'll be back in a couple of weeks. This is Chris Shiflett signing off for Walking the Floor. Adios, amigo! Sounds about right. I might be wrong. Sounds about right.